Motivation is when your dreams put on work clothes. Benjamin Franklin. Pro, I am your host, Marvin B, coming at you from once again warm and sunny Florida. We are not far from Tampa, the home of Super Bowl 50 with the great Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I don't like Tom, but I have to root for the Buccaneers as they're in my home state. Today we are joined by Nexus Tech CEO Bill Wasilius. Bill, how are you?
Hey, good morning, Marvin. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine.
You can't throw out the pre-Super Bowl arrogance there, Marvin. The game hadn't happened yet.
No, but there's a reason I'm doing that, and I'll get to that in just a minute. Folks, if you're just joining us for the first time by video or by audio, Podnuts Pro is the podcast for business IT support. We are here to help you run your business better, smarter, and faster. We basically share product stories and tips, anything that we can do to help you run your business better. A lot of times it's what I use to do my business better, but I have on experts all the time who help give me knowledge and hopefully you as well. So, Bill, before we start, I want to ask you, do you know who Florida Man is?
I don't. Should I?
Well, I mean, in a sense, yes, Florida Man is a phenomenon that has been going around where if you type into your internet browser or search bar or anything like that, if you just type in Florida Man and the date, any date, you're going to see a great story about a Florida man. Usually, it's crazy, ridiculous, stupid. They started off involving gators, but now they involve a whole bunch of different stuff. So I did not talk about this on my last show, so I want to make sure I get to it now because this is before the Super Bowl. That's why I mentioned it. So I have to thank Brian, who sent me a link just the other day. And I get submissions all the time of people that want to, you know, give me the Florida Man story. So let me share this real quick. So Brian sent me this link. A Florida man was charged in monkey trafficking scheme. This is a legit story. Jimmy Wayne Hammonds basically owns a place called the Monkey Whisperer, and he has a domain, themonkeywhisperer.com, and he sells pet monkeys. On his website, he actually lists all the states that you're not allowed to have pet monkeys. Well, California is on that list, but he was selling monkeys to California, and so that's how he got caught.
This guy's like the Tiger King, only different animal.
Pretty much, you know. I mean, Florida is known for, you know, taking down the Tiger King with Carol Baskins. They are not far from each other, and this is not far from Tampa, where the Super Bowl is going to be held. So I wanted to share that story, but I also need to go ahead and let everybody know I am getting a ton of you sending Florida Man stories because of the Super Bowl. Ton of stuff is going to be happening. Some of them I can't share because they're about things like prostitution and how they won't be making the normal amount of money that they're used to making. But I do want to at least acknowledge that not only is there a monkey whisperer in Florida, there is a chicken whisperer in Florida, and she basically operates out of Key West. Now, she wasn't as insightful in her business acumen because she does not own chickenwhisperer.com, but she works with the Key West Wildlife Center. And the funny thing is, she is actually a licensed chicken catcher. I didn't know that they could have a license for that. So Belinda Coyner is the chicken whisperer, and I will put links to both of those in there. I also want to reference this story because we had a gentleman who is being shown all over the internet now because there is video and audio of him flirting with a judge as he is awaiting his bail sentencing. And so he flirts with this judge Tabitha Blackman, and it's just ew is what it is. Didn't work for him. He still had to pay a $5,000 bail. So I will have the link to that story. And the last one I want to mention is this is a true Florida man. Matthew Kyle Leithman is really the Florida man because he has the state of Florida tattooed on his face. That is his mugshot because two nights ago, he was arrested for misusing 911 because he called twice to request a ride home. He was basically trashed, high, whatever. And in the state of Florida, you can't misuse the 911 system. He was charged with marijuana possession. The worst part about it is he was actually offered a ride home by a sheriff's deputy that he turned down and then turned around and called 911. So in true Florida man fashion, that's what we have. So,
well, that's what we call a career limiting move when you put a tattoo right between your eyes.
Yep. So normally when I have regular guests on, Bill, I would ask them to have a story from their state that would challenge that.
Well, I'm sitting here in sunny Denver, Colorado, and if people follow what's been going on in Colorado, there's plenty of those kinds of stories here.
Yep.
We have pretty colorful folks too, but I think you folks down in Florida have the, you know, have the take the prize for the animal trafficking.
Yeah, we do pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. So let me explain to all the listeners and viewers out there. So Bill Wasilius is the CEO of Nexus Tech. That is a national MSP, and most of you will remember me with the nickname Man in the Van. Mainly because even though I do have employees and subcontractors, it's really just me as a one-man shop. I didn't want to call myself an MSP years ago, and then I went to the hybrid MSP. But at the same time, I realized, you know what? I'm doing just as much MSP work as a lot of the bigger companies. There's always this little battle that goes on. Are you really an MSP? Are you really this? And sometimes I'll talk to CEOs of companies that may have 2 techs, 5 techs, sometimes up to 10 techs, and they're not doing, at least in my mind, what MSPs really do, but I think the definition changes. So I had this opportunity to find somebody who's, I don't want to say that you're a real MSP and that others aren't, but on a national level, it's a much different thing. So what do you think about that when we all fight amongst ourselves as being MSPs?
Yeah, you know, Marvin, the term MSP means a lot, and there's, you know, it's kind of like the term cloud, right? It means different things to different people. You know, your point about real MSP or not, I don't subscribe to that. But I'd tell you, for those that don't know, Nexus Tech is a national provider. MSP is Marvin mentioned. We operate out of 8 different markets in the United States, in Southern California, Phoenix, Denver, Colorado, Las Vegas, Houston, Texas, and Boston, Massachusetts. We're about 300 people strong. So, you know, if there's any difference there, Marvin, it's size and scale. But what we do for our customers, not all that different. You know, maybe how we do it is a little different. Maybe the depth of technical expertise and depth of bench is maybe a little bit different. Maybe our customers are a little different, and why they need somebody to help them manage their IT infrastructure might be a little different, but we're all part of the same industry. And, you know, there's no reason to, you know, call those the haves and have nots, right?
Right.
We're all in the same business.
Right. We're all doing the same thing. We're all basically trying to keep our customers in operation, keep their computers and networks running. The difference may be in how we go about it in terms of, You know, I think when you and I originally talked, the phrase efficiency and proactive care is how we kind of termed it. And can you, because I'm going to do a poor job of it, can you explain that phrase for us?
Yeah. So when I think about a managed service provider and what they do, you know, there are those sort of companies or you know, small regional MSPs that they do a great job of picking up the phone and dispatching a tech when somebody has a problem, right? That reactive sort of response, call me when you have a problem. And that's great for, you know, a lot of businesses that don't really have the need for, you know, 24/7 proactive care. I think that's probably the main difference. You know, our customers at Nexus Tech expect more than just, you know, somebody to pick up the phone and solve their problem when they have one. They expect us to identify those problems, proactively fix them on their behalf. And so that's where that proactive care comes into play. I think the efficiency comment that I made before when we first chatted is really, you know, we see this in the market. You know, a lot of our competitors are really, you know, they're getting by based on, you know, brute force and people, right? Instead of automation and tool sets and those sorts of things that make, you know, a larger scale MSP a little bit more efficient. So, you know, it's a combination of, I always talk about people, process, systems, right? So the triangle. And I think it's far too common with IT folks, right? We focus on the systems piece, right? You know, because we're techies and we like the technology, but it's really people, process, and technology.
All right. That was a question that I had in my mind about asking you about, you know, how much automation is in your business, because I know that a lot of the push for MSPs is get everything automated and only do remote. That's what MSP is all about.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And I would tell you that we've invested at Nexus Tech in a lot in orchestration and automation. But it's still our 300 people that are talking to our customers every single day, right? So if you can make some of the recurring tasks that MSPs do and you can automate some of those tasks, it just makes you more efficient. But at the end of the day, we are a people-based business. My company hears me say this on all hands calls every month. You know, we're not a technology company. We're a service company. And our customers expect human beings to be responsive to their needs, to, you know, regardless of how much automation you've done on the back end to make your business more efficient, they still like talking to our people, right? They have personal relationships with our technicians, with our service desk folks, with our engineers that come out on site, with our project team that goes out and delivers on technology projects. It's still a people-based business. It's just that we've done a lot of what we call orchestration and automation on the back end to make it so that we're more efficient, more responsive to our customers. You know, case in point, if one of our, you know, we have 75 or so of our 300 people, our service desk, you know, technicians reacting to alerts and calls from customers, you know, we invest a lot of time in making the tool sets that they use more efficient. Case in point. So you get an alert in a monitoring system, you know, the technician doesn't have to manually create, right? We've got automated ticket generation and those sorts of things, scripting that helps make sure that event that is going on is, you know, it's the right time to hand it to a person because we've tried three or four things automated in an automated fashion, that kind of stuff. But then by the time that service desk engineer gets on the phone with a customer, they're dealing with a real problem that's, you know, we've weeded out sort of the common things that could have caused that. And we know that it needs human intervention. So okay. Long-winded way of saying, I believe in you know, I am a heavy, heavy believer in automation, but it doesn't substitute for your people.
Right. So a lot of times when I've talked with people about it, you know, automation and scripting breaks too. So when it doesn't work, somebody's got to be there to either fix it or go beyond to solve the problem. And a system down, regardless if it's under contract or not under contract, if you're monitoring it, sometimes people have to go on site and deal with it that way. So, yep.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
All right. So I probably need to ask this question just so that anybody paying attention doesn't lose sight of where we are here. But do you really see a difference in the tool sets being used between MSPs, large or small?
Yeah, we do. You start to see the common tool sets and platforms. You know, you and I have talked about this before. At Nexus Tech, we're pretty active in the mergers and acquisition space. We've done 7 acquisitions in the last 2 years. So we get an opportunity to see what a lot of smaller regional MSPs are using and how they're operating. You start to see the same names come up again. You know, you hear LabTech, you hear SolarWinds. On the RMM side, you know, you hear ServiceNow, you hear ConnectWise on the ITSM, you know, system. So you start to see some patterns, but we see all kinds of stuff, right? We've seen smaller MSPs using, you know, web help desk, right, for ticketing system, right? So at the end of the day, I don't get too hung up about that because all of those platforms do effectively the same things. They may do them in a little different way. They may have a different user interface. I think our engineers care more about that than I do, right? Because they're kind of enamored with the tool sets. But at the end of the day, you know, those sort of platforms all do the same things, right? They just do them in a little bit of a different way, or maybe they've got advanced capabilities that you really like.
Okay. Now, I was going to ask this question a little bit later, but I'll move it up as well. When you take over a shop or acquire a shop and they've got one set of tools, or you get a new client and they've got their set of stuff, do you standardize them and move them off of their platform onto your stuff?
We do. And you know, in many cases, that's a tough conversation, especially with an acquire, you know, a company that we would acquire, right? They like the way that they're doing things. They like their tool sets. They're very comfortable with them. But the reason we do that is it allows us to have the whole team Nexus Tech able to come in and help, you know, as opposed to staying regional, right? So if, you know, case in point, we recently acquired a company in Denver, and we're in the process of integrating that. And those folks, you know, use different systems and different tool sets, but they're a small team of 30 people or so. And we have 300, you know, 270 other people that can come in to help, and they can't do that if they're using dissimilar tools and platforms, right? So it's the standardization is really so that we can bring to bear the whole Nexus Tech team to help, as opposed to staying in our regional silos.
Okay.
A customer, you bring up a good point. You know, if a customer is using different tool sets, you know, it's a different conversation. Then it's, hey, Mr. Customer, you know, you pay us for an outcome, not a tool set, right? You want us to provide, you know, 24/7 support and, you know, 5 nines of uptime and all those sorts of things. We can't do that if we've got this kaleidoscope of tools, right? So it's sometimes a difficult conversation, but yeah, we do standardize them.
Now, are those situations where you might come in as a co-management type deal where they've got in-house IT, they want you to actually oversee it and maintain it? So how much of that battle is with the internal IT department?
Yeah, we do a little bit of that. You know, some of our larger customers that are big enough to have an internal IT department, and, you know, they just want some help maybe on the off hours. They want nights and weekends or whatever. But the majority of our customers don't want to deal with that, right? That's the whole reason that they're they're interacting with a managed service provider is IT is not a core competency. You know, they're doctor's offices or, you know, regional banks or whatever. And, you know, IT is not core to what they do. So, you know, occasionally we'll get somebody that wants us to be a co-managed, you know, nights and weekends shop. And in those cases, we'll probably have to do some, you know, integration between ticketing systems, right? So that we're not operating in different worlds. I don't know if that's where you were going with that.
That's a part of it. Now, I was going to follow up with, so you mentioned that you will provide off-hour support for other MSPs. So you have companies like mine that will come to you and say, hey, can you provide additional support for us?
We do.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not the lion's share of our customer base. The lion's share of our customers are the end user and the end customer themselves. So our sort of target, what we would call a target customer profile, is sort of the average size of companies that we serve is somewhere between, call it 100 to 1,000 users. We have some smaller, some bigger, but that's, you know, that's where the lion's share of it is. Those kinds of businesses tend to have, you know, significant IT infrastructure, but they're not big enough to have a significant IT organization to support it. And so those are the ones that, you know, we just make more sense for.
Okay.
The organizations that are smaller than 100, call it employees or users, oftentimes, you know, they don't see the value of technology, much less a managed service provider. And you probably run into those, right?
I run into that all the time. Yep. Yeah, even more than 100. I've got a client with 170, and it's like, you know, pulling teeth to get them to understand what it is I'm trying to get them to do. You know, why? Yeah. You know, why should we pay you monthly? And why should, you know, you, you know, we don't need you to monitor. We'll just call you when we need you.
That's right. Yeah. And, so the ones that are smaller than that tend to maybe not see the value of IT, much less a managed service provider. But I think when you get into that 100 to 1,000, maybe 2,000 users, that's where a lot of things we just talked about come into play, right? You know, mature, integrated, orchestrated systems and efficiency on the back end. And, you know, you just can't throw technicians at it.
Okay. So, all right, I just had a couple of quick thoughts go through. I'm going to circle back to those. Okay. So in terms of your core customer, I know you talked about a range, but do you specialize in any verticals? Are there customers that you will turn away for any reason?
Well, let me address the vertical question first. We have customers in 25 different verticals.
Okay.
So, you know, we have, what you probably have figured out as well is supporting IT infrastructure is no different in healthcare as it is in retail, as it is in manufacturing, right? They all have servers, they all have storage arrays, they all have desktops, laptops, they all have Wi-Fi, like all that stuff is the same. Where it differs is on the compliance side. You start to see differences. You know, you have healthcare is, you know, HIPAA and financial services, you know, has some regulatory things that require expertise. So we have 25 different verticals represented in our 1,500 customers that we have nationally. We have high concentration in the top five. And that's not, you know, it's not because we say, you know, we're going to go focus on those verticals. It's just, you know, that they tend to multiply when they find out that we have expertise in, you know, architecture, engineering, and construction, or in healthcare, right? You know, they all talk to each other, and that helps. But your last question of do we turn anybody away? The answer to that is probably yeah, if they're too small, right? Mm-hmm. Like they, what, like we just talked about, right? Where they don't see the value,
right?
And you know, we sort of set a threshold of sort of minimum recurring revenue that will service, but you know, it won't come without a conversation first, right? Never turn away a customer unless you have to.
Right. Which I do the same thing. I'll talk to everybody, but it's got to be a good fit.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter the size, but it does matter, what you talked about, the value, you know, is it going to be a benefit to both of us?
Right.
And all of that. Let's talk about, I guess we'll go ahead and switch gears. So everybody's trying to get big. Everybody's trying to grow. And in the case of you, you mentioned earlier that, you know, you had 7 acquisitions in the last 2 years, you said?
Right. Yep.
So is that a growth strategy for you, or is it just opportunities that came up that you took advantage of? Or how do you see Nexus Tech growing?
Yeah, it's both. So Marvin, we have an organic growth engine as well as an M&A engine. Both pieces are part of the strategy. You know, we have done not just the 7 acquisitions in the last 2 years, but those companies that we bought had acquired other businesses prior to us buying them. So we've got a fabric of probably 14 different companies when you count all of those that, you know, that happened before our time. The M&A piece, because we are a private equity owned business, is part of that strategy. It comes with that. I would say most MSPs that are smaller and maybe more regional in nature or local in nature aren't going to have that much. You know, that you start to see that when you get MSPs larger than, you know, call it $10 to $15 million a year, then they start to develop a little bit of an M&A engine themselves. But you got to focus on the organic growth piece. And so, you know, if you're a smaller MSP, maybe 10 or 15 techs, and you're going, gosh, how do I grow? I would just say, remember what we exist to do, and that's to serve the customer. And so, you know, there's no better customer than the one that you have right now, right? We all get infatuated with the shiny penny and that big customer that's out there that we want to go win, but you got to take care of the ones you have.
Right.
And, you know, the organic growth is a huge part of what we do.
Okay. So a lot of those MSPs that are smaller in nature, and from my perspective, of course, they're larger than me. They're in that, you know, 1 to 5 million range. Run across a lot of them that are looking to be bought, or they're looking to buy somebody else. And they're always trying to figure out, you know, how do we do that? And, you know, how in the world can I structure my business to be attractive to somebody? So In your case, do you have kind of like a standard of what an MSP should, you know, look like, what components they should have, you know, what technologies they need to have in place before you look at acquiring them?
Yeah, we do. And I'm not going to give away the playbook here, the secret sauce, Marvin, but I'll tell you the kind of the factors that we look at. You know, geography is one, right? We like businesses, both in geographies that we're already in, as well as new geographies that have opportunity. But that's, you know, you're not going to do anything about that. You are where you are. I'd say term of customer contract.
Okay.
And for that, you know, there's no guarantee on revenue stream, but, you know, as much of a guarantee as you can get, right? Having long-term, what we call take or pay contracts, right? Where unless you significantly violate a service level agreement, you know, that those things are fairly predictable. We look at the percent of that business that is recurring in nature, not transactional in nature, right? So a lot of the MSPs that we look at are, you know, very project driven, which is great. And we'll talk about that, but, you know, that kind of business, you have to replenish every month, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, to a lesser degree, we look at not necessarily the technologies, but the service offerings. Is there something that they do that is unique or something that we don't do, right? Where we can fill out our toolbox. And then sort of tangential to that would be, who do they do it for? Do they have a niche expertise in legal or healthcare or whatever, right? Those are interesting.
Right.
To us. There's a lot of factors that go into how you take your own MSP and make it a marketable, you know, M&A target. But I'd say, you know, the things that matter the most are, you know, net retention, right? So what percentage of your revenue do you retain, you know, from January 1 to 12/31? Obviously businesses that not only retain but grow their base are more attractive to us than those that are managing the decline. But yeah, it's a complicated process, but you know, that gives you a high level idea of the things that we look right. for.
So it sounds like you do have a set of what the industry likes to term KPIs. What is it? Key product indicators, where,
yep.
you know, you
key
look
performance
at
indicators,
key performance yeah. indicators, you know, things like churn. Now, how deep yeah. do you look at things of, for instance, like first contact resolution rate or, you know,
yep.
Business utilization per tech or things like that? Do you really look at those things?
We do. Yeah. If you spend any time talking to our operations leaders, they will tell you that I'm famous for a saying, which is, if you can't measure it, it didn't happen.
Okay.
And so we are very, very metrics driven. You know, as a Microsoft Gold partner, you know, we're very, very astute in Power BI, and we've got dashboards that we review, and we have a monthly review of all of our KPIs with all areas of business. You know, all the ones you talked about, right? MTTR, MTTE, or mean time to engineer, which is respond, right? MTTR being resolve.
Okay, I know that one. I know FCRR, first contact resolution rate, first level yep. resolution rate, yep. Mean yep. time to resolve, all those.
All of those. We do measure utilization by tech. We measure probably the most important metric that we measure is customer satisfaction. Again, I go back to the fact that we're a service business, not a technology business. We're a service business that happens to deal with technology. And if you don't measure customer satisfaction and, more importantly, make decisions based on what that data is telling you, and we do it in two ways. We do it transactionally, right? You know, you called me, I solved your problem, tell me how I did. And then we do much more of a relationship style customer survey that measures net promoter score. And that's more based on the customer's willingness to refer us to another customer. So, you know, if you know anything about NPS, it's the percentage of promoters, somebody that gave you a 9 or a 10, minus the detractors, right? Somebody that gave you 6 or below. And, you know, the promoters are out in the market saying, hey, Nexus Tech is great. And the detractors are out in the market saying Nexus Tech sucks.
Right.
And, the math formula there is what gives you net promoter score. But we measure both, right? We need to know how we're doing on each individual interaction with a customer, as well as how are we doing overall, you know, supporting our customers and their business.
All right. Now, are you doing those with things like exit surveys or QBRs? I mean, are you actually talking to the customers?
All of the above. Yeah, that customer sat data is front and center in our quarterly business reviews with our customers, where we sit down with them and go, here's how the last quarter went. Here's everything that happened. Oh, by the way, here's where customer sat sits. And, you know, we're kind of unique in one regard, and that is every single person at Nexus Tech has at least half of their variable compensation tied to customer satisfaction.
Really?
Yep. I care about it that much.
Wow. That could be kind of a little heavy burden on some techs, huh?
Well, I tell you, it what it does is it sends a message to the technician that their job is more than just the technical, right?
All right.
you can, and I'm sure you've seen this in your career in IT, Marvin, that you can be the smartest guy in the room, but if the customer isn't happy, that doesn't matter, right? There's a how you do it, and then there's a what you did. And if you're technically right, but you did it with, you know, with burrs under your set, like you're, the customer's not going to enjoy that. You don't want the customer to cringe when they pick the phone up to call you.
Right.
Right.
I get that. And I've gotten business because of that, where other techs smarter than me just either don't know how to talk to the customer, talk down to the customer, don't explain things to the customer very well. And it doesn't leave them with a nice warm and fuzzy. Whereas there's other clients that I have that I probably really shouldn't have, you know, based on my level of tech versus what they need, but they love me as a person.
That's right.
And they're like, no, we want you to, you know, take care of us. Whatever you need to know to figure it out, you know, we're fine. So that's,
yeah. Every time we have a customer satisfaction issue with a customer, and not every time, but high percentage of the time where there's an issue with customer sat, it almost never has to do with how smart the technician was. It has everything to do with those soft skills, how they communicated it, or lack thereof. And you know, what the customer wants is they want somebody to own their problem and own it to completion and to communicate with them along the way about what they're doing. Even if it takes a little bit longer, they can be patient with that.
Right.
But if you don't communicate effectively and you don't have great customer satisfaction skills, we put every one of our technicians through a customer sat orientation training where we talk about, you know, what's the one flaw that a lot of technicians do? They're oversharing, right?
Yes.
You know, I'm sorry, I can't help you right now. I'm picking my kids up at school, which might be true. However,
it's not what they want to hear.
They don't really care, right? They just want their problem fixed. So, the KPI that matters the most to us is obviously customer satisfaction, but we measure all of those MTTE, MTR, first call resolution, utilization. And I think, you know, it's keeping it in balance. You can, just like you can not measure KPIs, you can also over measure KPIs. I've been part of business before where we measured everything, right? And when you measure everything, you measure nothing, right? Because you can't, then you've got so much noise coming at you, you can't focus on what the important ones are.
Okay. So I was thinking a different way. I understand what you're saying there, but part of me was thinking, you know, I have this question in my mind, is there ever a thing as being too big? And the reason I thought of that is because I have dealt with a couple of MSPs where either I subcontract for them or I've gone up against them in business. And in a lot of cases, I win the business because I'm not as complicated or as bureaucratic, not as much red tape, where, you know, every meeting there's more than sufficient number of people on that meeting. You know, we've got to have a vice president in, we've got to have a tech person in, we got to have the salesperson in, and all we're doing is talking about how we can, you know, upgrade a server.
Yeah.
You know, it's like overkill to some degree, or it takes too long to implement something because there's too many steps in the process.
Yeah, your point is valid, right? It, you know, you absolutely can get too big if you lose sight of the fact that the customer can't feel, you know, you don't want them to feel that, right? So you can get large, you can get national. One of our sort of mantras at Nexus Tech is national platform with a local look and feel, right? We want our customers to, you know, feel like they're dealing with the Marvins of the world. But we want to give those folks that are serving those customers the national bench strength that they can bring to bear any number of resources to help if they run into something, you know, something that's difficult or complex. That's what we tell customers that, and it's true, right? The customer that likes the local, regional MSP tech, also needs to realize that I call it the reliance on Bubba, right? They get reliant on Bubba, whoever Bubba is. And then when Bubba leaves or, goes to do something else, they're left high and dry, right? A national MSP can bring in, 30 or 40 Bubbas to help. And, that's where, the customer goes, okay, I see the strength of the platform.
Right. And you made a very good point is, the ability to standardize no matter, who the client is to where, they want to talk to Johnny all the time, but Johnny's not available today. Somebody else can step in and know the systems or at least be able to figure out what Johnny's been doing for so long. And that's one of the things that, even though I'm small, I try to do that so that any tech can walk in and as long as they've got the right credentials, they can get in and figure out my stuff. It's not, I don't have it in a, McDonald's vault where only I know the answers.
We're up here.
Yeah. So as we were talking about things of the organic growth and the customers and stuff, I know that a lot of growth MSPs are taught that there has to be a sales component. You've got to have somebody that goes out and sells your business. Now, I imagine a company of your size, you probably have that, or do you do it a different way? Well, how does that work?
We do. Yeah. So we've got our sales marketing organization is about 70 people strong.
Oh, okay.
Across the country. But I would tell you this, and we have another mantra that we talk about internally, which is everybody sells. Our best sellers in some cases are our engineers, right? And it's not because they're trying to shove things down the customer's throat, but they're interacting with the customer every single day.
Right.
They know better than anybody what pain points the customer is having and what the customer needs, to solve that. And so we call it the golden ticket. Marvin, you're probably old enough to remember Willy Wonka and the golden ticket, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we did a golden ticket.
And just to let people know, Johnny Depp's version of the Chocolate Factory or whatever he did, watch the original.
That's right. Yeah, well, my kids think Johnny Depp was the original. Right. So
yep.
I think it's funny, but we did the Golden Ticket Award last year where it was a competition across the company for non-salespeople. So for the 230 people or so in our business that are not sellers. And it was the most business that they generated, opportunities that they generated for our customers. And our winner that we just awarded about 2 weeks ago is one of our field engineers that is, every day he's going out to client sites that have asked for us to come out on a regular basis. And, he was hands down the winner. So
nice.
The long-winded answer to that is everybody sells. If you think that it's a salesperson's job to sell it, you're wrong. And, the best person in the best position to sell is often the engineer or the technician that's doing the work.
All right. Sounds good. And that's why you send them all to a customer satisfaction course, I guess.
Yep. Well, they don't all listen, but, they all go.
All right. Is there anything else that maybe I didn't ask that you were thinking about in terms of, what really defines an MSP in terms of, how are we all supposed to act in business? I mean, is there anything that I failed to ask you?
I think we covered most of it, right? It's, tech support is one thing. Managed service is completely different. It involves tech support, but you have to be doing tech support and then some. In our case, we have three lines of business, one being the managed service provider, 24/7, reactive, proactive monitor, pick up the phone when they call, fix their stuff. We have a sizable professional services organization that's doing project-based work. And then we have, you know, we're a reseller of many of our partners' technologies. And so our customers look at us as that single throat to choke, right? They want us to be able to provide them with the hardware, the software. They want us to be able to help them implement it, upgrade it, you know, migrate it. And then they want us to manage it, right? And those three things are, you know, when we're out looking at companies to acquire, we see most of them are not doing all three of those. They're usually doing the project-based stuff and the managed services stuff to some degree. But that's, in my mind, and I'm just one opinion, right, on this, that's the thing that differentiates, you know, a tech support business with a managed service provider.
All right. So it was interesting. So you actually have those as three separate divisions, I guess. So the, mm-hmm. the services, the managed service. Now, what makes it truly different in terms of the regular MSP work versus your professional services?
Well, in a perfect world, those two groups would only, you know, we would have enough project-based work that the project engineers are out doing project-based work, right? We do have a little bit of bleed over from the managed services side. And it's usually when, you know, some complex problem happens, something breaks, and your tier one, two, and three on the managed services side can't figure it out, then they'll leverage the project engineering team. But their lives are very different, right, for the most part. You know, when we talked about KPIs earlier, right, the KPI that matters the most on the managed services side is customer satisfaction, right? A little bit less utilization, you know, more important is utilization. On the project side, it's utilization and customer sat in a different order, right? We want those folks being highly billable, highly utilized. And
so that's going to be pretty much like your installations team, your, you know, migrations teams, those types of mm-hmm. things.
That's right. And we even take our pro services, the project-based team, and we break them down into practice areas. So, you know, we've got the network engineering team and the cloud team and the security team, the Microsoft team, and they generally stay busy on projects, you know, 24/7, 365. There is, even within those practices, though, there are a lot of the engineers that have skills in multiple areas. And so they get the benefit of doing, you know, projects in multiple areas, and they really dig that.
Okay. So how does vendor management play a role? You mentioned that your customers have one throat to choke, which is yours, and mm-hmm. I try to do that myself, and I do, I guess, a little bit of all of this. And when it comes to vendor management, I try to also be the first point of contact where, you know, if it's a, you know, VoIP solution or a mm-hmm. software solution, yeah, I may have to outsource that, but I still want them to call me first. And then, you know, either I deal with it or I get help from the vendor, or I tell the customer to go to that. But do you do all the vendor management inside of Nexus
yeah.
Tech?
Yeah. That's a good point, right? We partner with, and I would say in our vernacular, vendor is the OEM, right? Microsoft, Dell, HP, Barracuda, those kinds of vendors. What you're talking about is partner delivered services in our vernacular.
Okay.
And, you know, we do a little bit of that. Most of what we do with our folks, but there's occasionally times where a customer says, hey, I need help with this technology or something that isn't something that we have traditionally done. Maybe we don't see it that often and it doesn't warrant building a team to support it. Those are good opportunities to have partner delivered services, but you touched on the most important part there, which is you have to maintain that customer interaction and then coordinate on the back end with that partner, because that's what the customer expects of you, right? They don't want you to go, oh, here, call Comcast or here, call whoever, you know, they pay you to be their integrator, if you will.
Okay. And so you said exactly what I thought, because I do have, again, some that I've worked with and some I've heard about where they're large, they're you know, I don't know if they're the same size as you guys or larger, but, you know, these are multi-million dollar companies that won't sell hardware.
Right.
Or they resell a solution, but they are not part of the implementation. They're not part of the support. They're just the reseller. And to me, that just seems, I don't know. It's almost like a car dealer where, yeah, I'll sell you the car, but, you know, you're on your own once it drives off the lot. And I don't see that as a good way to be in our industry.
Yeah, that's exactly how we approach it. We want to be the integrator, if you will. Even if I'm leveraging somebody else to deliver, I'm still your, you know, your throat to choke, if you will.
Well, I'm still responsible if it doesn't work. I'm not going to, I'm not going to, you know, play the blame game. And well, I just referred it to, I don't, you know, no, if I refer it, it's got to be something that is going to work. Or if it doesn't, I take responsibility for it.
You bet. Yeah.
All right. Well,
how are we doing on time, Marvin?
We are coming right up on our hour. So we did pretty good.
Now we got through a lot of this. Any other questions for me about on our list that we wanted to talk about?
Well, I had a couple that are going to take us down a huge old rabbit hole, but we can come back to those. I did want to say that, and I didn't do it earlier, but for those of you, so Bill has done a number of videos and stuff that you can find him on the YouTube, does a lot of giving of advice to CEOs. So if you are of a size or are a CEO and you want to know how to run your business, you can find Bill on the YouTube. But I also wanted to talk about the fact that one of the things that I should have said earlier and that I love that you did is you had a series entitled Unfiltered Conversations on Racial Issues last summer when we all were trying to do something and I had a couple of shows myself. But you did a really good job, I think, with yourself and your buddy from, now is he from college or high school in college or?
Yeah, Chris Howard, Dr. Chris Howard, who is now the president of Robert Morris University in Pittsburgh. He and I played college football together at the Air Force Academy. So he's my brother, and we had a cool conversation about some pretty tough topics that were going on, and we're, you know, in front of everybody's mind, and we're all over the news, and you know, he and I have had that kind of relationship for 30 something years, and it was just easy. But if we wanted to have that conversation so that everybody could kind of see how you do that, right? I think this, a lot of the issues, the racial issues that were, you know, a little bit taboo to talk about, you know, people just avoided them. And I think that was part of the problem, is people weren't talking. And so that was why we did that.
Well, it was an interesting thing. And I myself had to take a step back and realize that, you know, one, I'm a black man. And I have a lot of white friends, and we never had those conversations. And it was actually awkward for them to talk to me, even though we had been friends for, you know, 15, 20, 25 years. And I thought, this shouldn't be that hard.
Yeah. And, well, it is a hard topic. And, you know, I think I had a couple of people after we filmed that come to me and say, yeah, Bill, but you know, Chris, and you've known Chris for, you know, 30 years. And that, you know, that's fair, right? He's a friend, and, you know, we've stayed at each other's houses, and we know every kids and all that. So there's a little level of familiarity there. Like, you wouldn't just walk up to somebody that you'd never met and have that same conversation. But it was really coming from the perspective of, hey, don't assume that your perception is reality. You know, be a little bit curious, because I've known Chris Howard for 30 years, and there were some questions I asked him that I'd never asked him before, but I trusted him enough, and I was comfortable enough that, you know, what was behind it for me was curiosity, and I'm trying to learn. And I think if you approach those kinds of conversations from that perspective, no harm can be done.
Yep. It was good. So I appreciate that you did that. And folks, if you want to go back and see all of that, I will have links to those on the show notes as well. unfiltered conversations on racial issues. It's actually a 4-part series. Not that long. It's, I think it's an hour total that you split up into four, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. Not like mine where we talked on and on and on. And that sort of thing.
People are going to lose an hour of their life. They're never going to get back.
That's right. My listeners say that every week, but as long as they keep coming back, that's right on. Great. Bill, I want to say thank you for taking the time. I know we've had several conversations over the last year. It's been good to be able to get some insight, especially for people who, you know, don't ever see what it is to be a big MSP. And actually, there was a comment in the chat where it says, really enjoyed that window into the big time.
Well, that's cool, man. Well, I appreciate you having me, Marvin. It's been good getting to know you, and feel free to reach out if you ever need anything.
All right, will do. And Bill, be sure to stay through the closing here. But ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening and or watching this episode of Podnuts Pro. For regular people, we are here on a regular basis every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. And if you need to or want to go back and look at past episodes, you can head over to podnutspro.com. The show is at 8 p.m. on Wednesdays, and you can go to podnutspro.com/live to catch those shows. Of course, you could also sign up to be notified when those shows are live, either in YouTube or the Facebook group. Just go to those platforms, look up Podnuts Pro, subscribe to the page, and you'll be notified when these shows are here. And that is going to do it for this episode, and I'll see you guys next Wednesday night. But until then, holla. We'll be right back.